Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark. Rolled up to my Chevrolet.
I climbed down up inside. Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me for the next 2 hours up until lunchtime. But I'm here for you. Your car questions, your car problems. We can handle horse trailers. We can handle trailers, gooseneck, fifth wheels, motorhomes, Class A, Class B, the buses, the big ones, the small ones, diesel stuff. We're pretty good at diesel stuff. And anything else that you want to talk about, any wives' tale that you want to discuss, any of that kind of stuff, 602-508-0960, first come, first served. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my friends at Quality Transmission. If you have any issue with the transmission, then Bob or Steve at Quality Transmission in Tempe is who would serve you the best. They do repairs on automatic and standards. They have years of experience doing repairs on cars and trucks and 4x4s and motorhomes. They're located in Tempe on McClintock, north of University, between University and the 202. But no matter where you live, Bob and Steve at Quality Transmission in Tempe, they're worth the drive. And you can tell them Mark sent you. I want to recap something that's always important. Mark's five rules of a happy auto repair. Number one, only tell them the symptoms. Make sure they write the symptoms down. If they don't write the symptoms down, tell them you want them to write them down so there's a record of your symptoms. I have a vibration. I have a noise. I have an engine miss, or my car bucks or shakes. Number two, when they call you with an estimate, you say to them, and everybody, you say, is this a fix or a guess? If it's a fix, then when I leave your facility, I'll be out X amount of dollars, but I won't have the bucking, the surging, the vibration, the howling. It'll start good hot, it'll start good cold, right? Or is this a guess? And if it's a guess, how are we going to unwind this deal? Because one of the parts you want to sell me is $500. So if you put the part on and it doesn't solve the problem, I'm going to assume you took the part back off, right? Number three, give me your final cost. Unless you want to be specific, just say, how much am I going to have to write my check for? I want you to figure shop supplies, environmental charges, sales tax, all that stuff. Figure it up. I want to know the total price. And please put my old parts in the boxes and set them on the passenger side floorboard, please. And obviously don't put any oil in there or gasoline stuff that's going to stink up my car. But if it's, you know, front-end suspension parts or electronic components like a mass airflow sensor or a PC or a coolant sensor, all that stuff goes nicely in the box. And number five, pay with a credit card. Always pay with a credit card. Gives you 30 days to analyze the success of the repair. And if they get kind of nasty with you when you say your car it has the same problem after $480 worth of repair bills, and they tell you, you know, go find another repair shop, you can contact MasterCharge or Visa. But in that situation, you're always going to win when you have two pieces of paper. You have the repair order number one that has the symptoms on it, and it has the repairs, and the car wasn't fixed. You have the second repair order from somebody else. The symptoms are the same, and now the car is fixed. Those two pieces of paper is like having Hank Aaron up to the bat, because they want to know who fixed it, they want to know what fixed it, and then they go back to shop number one and say, hey, by the way, and that kind of stuff. So that should help you out.
Bo is your first caller.
All righty. What symptoms? Is this a fix or a guess? Number three, what's my final cost? Number four, I want my old parts back, please. And number five, pay with a credit card. Bo, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hey, I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, well, good for you. Is it cold or warm, or what's the weather like?
Oh, it's a little cool today. It's supposed to be only 45, but a couple days ago it was 75. So, yeah. Michigan weather.
Yeah, and you know, you can't complain about that. That's a pretty good spread right there. Nice, cool nights and you know, days where you don't have to wear a jacket. So what kind of a problem can you have in the Motor City?
Well, I got a 1992 Toyota Camry, four-cylinder automatic. I'm trying to pull out the passenger side CV axle.
Okay.
I've done them before. I know there's a C-clip. That has a center bearing in there, and there's like a big about 2.5-inch C-clip. I did this one 4 months ago, and for some reason, I can't get it out. I got in there with a pry bar or a yanked on it, and I don't know if it's frozen in on that center bearing, or you have any tricks?
You know, I'm not quite sure that big C-clip doesn't hold a seal in, right?
No, there's a center bearing in there. It's sort of the long side. It's on the passenger side, yeah.
I understand. Now, the axle, do you already have the one you're going to replace it with?
Yes.
Okay, and so on the outboard side, it's got a spline shaft with a thread on the end of it, right?
Oh, you're talking about by the wheel?
Yes.
Yes. I got that off.
Okay. On the inboard side, the axle, is it splined as well?
Going into the transmission?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, on the end of the shaft, is there a groove all the way around there with a round ring inside that groove?
No.
So there's nothing at all on that spline. It's just a straight spline.
Correct.
Okay, and you're trying to pull that inboard joint out of the transmission, and it won't come.
That's correct. But there's a center bearing in there halfway on the axle shaft. And there's a C-clip on there. I've gotten that out. I did it 4 months ago. They usually just slide out. But this one is just doesn't want to come out.
I just can't picture, and I apologize, I can't picture this inner bearing. The shaft that you want to put in, it's all one piece, right?
That's correct.
But it has a centerpiece in it, you're saying, that you can separate the two halves.
Well, not at the center bearing, at the joint you could if you took the boot off. But it's sort of a long shaft, so about halfway it has a center bearing. When you come out of the transmission, maybe 14 inches, there's a bearing there. And it's about a 2-inch bearing that supports it. And there's a C-clip that you take out, and usually that comes right out when you pull that axle shaft out.
Now,
it seems to be frozen in there somewhere.
Okay. And so you've tried getting a small pry bar behind between the transmission and the back side of the slip joint. That's a slip joint on the inside. And you can't pop that out.
I can't get it out.
Okay.
I've tried.
Okay. I don't have an answer for you, and that makes me mad at myself, but I tell you what I will do. If you can't get it out, and sometimes you have to be kind of rough with it, but I don't want you to break the case of the transmission, okay? Sometimes you have to get underneath it, and you have to get a long piece of brass center, solid round, and you have to put it on the inside of the slip joint, which is the inner joint. And then you have to just get a big hammer and tap it a couple times. And what I would do is I'd tap it on the bottom and then rotate it a half a turn and tap it again and rotate it a half a turn and tap it again. No matter where you go, let's rotate it each time you do it. But I'm just not picturing this big C-clip. I'm wondering if you don't. Did you leave, when you pulled the axle out of the inner joint, did it have a little tripod on it, on the end of it?
That goes into the transmission?
Uh-huh.
No, I don't know. There was no tripod that I know of.
Okay. Now, inside that joint, on the inside of the transmission, on the inside of the axle, there's a tripod that goes in and out of that housing covered by the boot. None of that is exposed on either axle, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I can only tell you that every time this happens at our shop, one of the guys will just, and I hate to say this because it's not, get a bigger hammer. But in your case, what I can't picture is that center joint and that big center C-clip, because the axle has to move from the slip joint. The slip joint stays in the transmission, but the axle moves not only up and down, but the end of it moves forward and backward for steering. So this joint you're talking about with this big 2-inch C-clip, could it be like a vibration dampener you're talking about?
No, it's a bearing. What happened on the Toyota, this is 92 and probably up a few years, on the passenger side, it's just a longer shaft. And I've done four of them, so I know I've gotten everything out before. I've had Toyotas, and about halfway, there's a bearing to support it, and then you come out, then there's another, that's where the next boot is on the outside of the bearing. You got the boot where it flexes, and then it goes to by the tire, there's another boot there where it turns.
Okay.
I guess CV joint, maybe we'd call it?
Yeah, no, it is. Two CV joints, a plunge joint on the inside, and then a CV joint on the outside.
Right.
And then, you know, so when you take this big C-clip off, if everything were to work nice, then the entire bearing would slide out along with the axle?
Right. It's on the new axle, too. It's part of the axle shaft.
All right. I hear what you're saying. So the axle clearly is attached to this bearing. Otherwise, it would slide out of the center of the bearing, and it doesn't. It didn't on the old ones, and it does on this one. And so when you took that C-clip out, the old bearing used to just slide right in there, and then you'd put the C-clip back in. This time you got the C-clip out, but you can't get the bearing out.
Right. I can't get the...
All right.
Somewhere there's... And I don't know if it's stuck in the transmission or is that bearing.
Well, if there's nothing on the end of those splines to indicate a snap ring on the splines, then the answer to your question is no. It's not stuck in the transmission. So put the transmission in neutral and try this. Do you have a slide hammer?
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you, why are you changing the axle?
What happens is when I make a turn, you can hear the outer, and I replaced it. I got it from AutoZone. Okay. I replaced it 4 months ago. And as when you make a turn, you can hear the CV joint, and you can hear it click, click, click.
Okay, you're right. That's a good reason to replace it. Was the outer boot torn or separated or leaking oil grease?
No, it wasn't.
Okay. What you could do is, and I don't, you're going to try to get this warranty through your parts place, right?
Well, it is under warranty. It's only like 5 months old, actually.
Okay. All right. Well, what I was going to tell you was to take the inner boot, go ahead and take the band off the boot, the bottom band, the one closest to the transmission, take it off, and just slide the axle out of the housing. And then you can use a slide hammer on the housing, pop it off, then you put the axle back in the housing, and you can leave the clamp loose and just tell them you had to do that to slide it out of the transmission. I mean, that's the only thing I know, because a slide hammer would do the trick for you. It if you grab the inner housing, and the only way to grab the inner housing is to take the inner housing apart.
Right.
All right, now you owe me. You got to email me at mark@marksalem.com and tell me what ultimately you did, so I can learn with you. Is that all right?
Okay. Right. Hey, I got one. Do you got time for one quick question?
Yes, sir.
I got a 99 Toyota Avalon. It's not mine. That doesn't matter.
Okay, hold on just a minute. Hold on. Bo, you hold on, because I got to take a break. When we come back, you'll be my first caller, I promise. The rest of you, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. For those of you outside the Phoenix area that are listening to the show, the toll-free number is pretty easy. Remember, this station is 960 The Patriot. So the phone number is 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. For those of you locally, 602-508-0960. 0960. Bo, you had another question on another car. Tell me that again.
Okay, it's a 99 Toyota Avalon with a V6. There's a knock. It either sounds like it's a rod knock or maybe a lift. I don't have lifters, I guess, but some on the top end. How could I sort of diagnose that?
You have to do is you have to determine if it's heat sensitive. So, otherwise, you start it up cold in the morning, and it's there until the motor warms up, or it's there for about 8 minutes, 9 minutes, 10 minutes, and then it goes away, or it's the other way around. It's not there in the morning, and after it warms up fully, then it's there. Now, after you get done, you figure that out, and you got the knock happening right now, right there. You're going to shut the car off, and you're going to take the spark plug wires, and you're going to take them, twist them gently, and pull them off the spark plugs, and then just gently set them back on. You make sure you have some insulated pliers. So when you start the car back up, it'll be running and running smoothly, and you'll hear the knock. You take your insulated pliers, and you pull the spark plug wire away from the plug, and it'll start missing, but I want to know if the noise changes. And as you go through, I think you said it was a V6, as you go through the six cylinders, sooner or later, if it's a rod knock or a main knock, it will change the noise when you get to the affected cylinder. But it could also be a broken flex plate, which is the flywheel on an automatic transmission. Those will break and cause an engine knock, and we've seen people rebuild engines for that. And admittedly, the first one got me tied up pretty tight too. But it could be a broken flex plate. It could be a bad valve, a lifter, a rocker. And that typically is heat sensitive, so it's going to be there cold, but once it warms up, it goes away. Another thing you could do is change the oil. 1,000 miles into your oil change, pull a sample, take it to the oil sample laboratory, and then they'll tell you you have an abundance of metal in here and the metal is coming from the crankshaft. Or they'll tell you your metal content is fine, which tells us that it's not eating the motor up from the inside. That'll cost you about $30-$40. So those are the things. Now, a stethoscope, a long screwdriver, sticking the handle in your ear, touching different things. Check to see if the noise changes between a reverse, neutral, and drive. And if it's typically that related, see, a rod noise is a double knock, and a main noise is a single knock, and it takes some experience to determine the two. But the rod is knock, 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 where the main is just knock, 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 knock. So if you can determine that, but unless you've overheated it or run it low on oil, it's probably not something that's bad. It's probably something in the valve train up top, and just pull the valve covers and look at it. All right, Bo, thank you very much. Good luck to you. This portion of
thank
Under
you.
You betcha. And those of you, again, outside the Phoenix metropolitan area that are listening to us anywhere, we've heard from Alaska and Detroit, is 888-960-9696. And you guys can use that in town, too, if you want.
Ted is next.
But the phone number is 602-508-0960. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. I want you, if you're in Mesa, I want you to think about this. Main and Stapley, Main and Stapley, Main and Stapley. Just east. Main and Stapley, just east, is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Brian and Thelma and their families have been serving Mesa in that general area since 1970. They can handle anything on your car, and if they're not the best, they will refer you to someone who is better able to service you than they are. They're honest, they're dependable, and it's a mighty fine couple. I'm telling you what, I am so proud to have them on our best car repair shops list. So if you live Main and Stapley, anywhere north, south, east, or west, and you don't already have a garage, may I please suggest that Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, Main and Stapley, just east, is a place you ought to go. Is it Mel?
Ted.
Ted, good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Yeah, I have a question about my wife's 01 Corolla.
Okay.
It's got about 102,000 miles on it, and I've been told that the front seal is leaking. And
okay.
I was wondering if I should maybe try to alleviate that by going to a heavier oil. Or is there some additive that I can make the seal swell? Or
you know, you got to make sure that we're that. Have you put a timing belt in that yet?
A timing belt?
Yes.
That's supposed to have a timing chain.
Okay. If it does, okay. Then that certainly would not be anything you'd want, except that sometimes the guide rails that are made of plastic to guide keep the chain, you know, in a perfect alignment. Sometimes those guide rails will break. The chain will start slapping the cover, and the cover leaks oil and makes it look like a lot of other oil leaks. But in reality, the chain has been slapping the cover, and it's worn a hole in the cover. That's why it's so important to diagnose it correctly.
Oh, okay.
Now, if it is a chain, then what they're talking about is that where the harmonic balancer slides on the front of the crankshaft, and there's a timing cover there, and it's oil resistant. I mean, it's oil proof, I should say. It's got oil in it. Then the crankshaft, the harmonic balancer slides into the seal in the front cover. So the replacement would simply be take all the fan belts off of it, get it up in the air, pull the harmonic balancer back, clean it up, and sometimes there's a speedy sleeve we can put on there to put a mirror finish back on it. Pry the old seal out of the cover and look at it, touch it, and then put the new seal back in, pack the back of it grease so you don't knock the garter string out of it, and then you have a special tool to put the harmonic balancer back on. That's not a tough job. Okay, but if you wanted to thicken up the oil at 102,000 miles, certainly, what oil are you using now?
Last oil change I had, it was the standard oil called out for it, which I think is like a 5W, 5W20
or 5W30. At 102,000 miles, if your wife drives around town, a 30 weight would be fine. Because you don't have a cabin in Pine Top where the car's going to see anything below 30 degrees, do you?
No.
Okay. Then just keep that in mind. That's all. A 30 weight will flow at 30 degrees, but it won't flow at 25 and it won't flow at 20. So a 30 weight would be a good oil for you to try. And if that changed the oil leak for the better, then you're home free. You could also add maybe 2 tablespoons of brake fluid to the new oil.
I see.
And the brake fluid has, if the seal is just needs to be softened a little bit, then the brake fluid has a tendency to cause the seal to soften and swell. However, if the seal is cut or if the lip is bad, the brake fluid won't do anything for it at all.
1 minute to go, Mark.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you very much, Mark. You're welcome, Ted.
Thank you.
And same to you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I think I told you, a couple months ago, that a gentleman, a Middle Eastern guy, came into the shop and he asked us to check his oil, and then we pulled him around to the shop to squirt a quart of oil in there. The hood fell down. He didn't fall on the ground, but he kind of stood there. Next thing we know, we pick him up. We say, "Are you okay? Are we okay?" And we set him on the ground, and the first things out of his mouth is, "Call 911, call 911. So we did, and the police show up, fire showed up, everybody showed up. But what happened... is that when the hood fell, there was a pair of pliers that was holding the hood up because the hood shocks were bad, and those mysteriously got knocked off about right where he was standing. And he had a white hat on when he came in, and after the hood supposedly fell on him and almost killed him, he still had the white hat on. And unfortunately, my son was underneath the hood, and my son's 6'3", and the hood hit the back of his shoulders, and the mark was there. So I'll tell you the end of the story when we come back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here helping you out with your car questions and car problems. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. You'd be hard-pressed to find a better shop up there on I-17 and Bell Road. I'm telling you, they are honest. They're dependable. They tell it the way it is. They're not there to rip your car apart and sell you everything in the world. They just want to fix what you need fixed or do the maintenance that you're due for, and that's it. Their goal is to offer the best services, the best prices, and get you back on the road quickly. They're at I-17 and Bell on the east side of I-17 on Bell. And if you need a good repair shop or you want to measure your own against somebody of mine, then give Kurtz a try and you'll understand why I recommend them. All right, real quick, let me tell you about the brand new dynamic laser cruise control for the Toyotas. Okay, the system, what it does is it has two different versions of cruise control. Okay, there's a laser system, and that keeps the car at a certain speed. But if it sees a car in front of you, the laser sees a car in front of you, it will back off the throttle and apply the brakes and keep you a specific distance. Now, you can have constant speed control, or you can have what they call follow-up control. Now, there's three different distances that you can set in the computer. You can say, I want to be on the back of the car in front of me real close, or medium, or real far. But sometimes the computer will take over and put you where you need to be, based on all the math of how fast you're going and how fast your car can stop. But this has the ability to apply the brakes without moving the pedal, because the brakes are going to be an electric motor, so they're going to just fire up the electric motor. But it's pretty interesting on how this is going to work, because you set the cruise, and basically you just steer the steering wheel. And as the car, you're coming down the freeway and there's a car in front of you, it will automatically slow down. And then if you make a change into the right lane and there's no car in front of you, then it'll put you back up to where your speed was at. And if traffic's real heavy, you just say, hey, I want to stay behind the car in front of me, and it will accelerate and decelerate, and you can sit there and just steer the steering wheel, and it will keep you in the loop. Plus, you're going to get better fuel economy because you're going to be moving along with traffic as opposed to racing up and stopping, racing up and stopping. So it's kind of a nifty kind of thing.
Ted is next.
Ted, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
Very good, thank you.
Not too long ago, you were talking with a Honda owner, and you advised him on how to adjust the rear brakes by pulling up the handbrake 20 times and stepping on the foot brake 20 times.
That's a couple of the ways. I didn't know what kind of rear brakes he had, but that would cover both of them.
What do you do for a Chrysler product, specifically a Sebring convertible?
Okay, do you know if it has drums or discs on the back?
I think it has discs.
Okay. There's two different ways on the disc brakes. And one of the ways is have your garage do it. Because you know how to work a ratchet when you're tightening something up, how the ratchet clicks one way and then you have firm control on the other?
Yeah.
The rear disc brakes have a ratcheting device. And every time you apply the brakes or the emergency brake, as it pushes in, it'll twist it clockwise. And when it twists it clockwise, if there's some play there, then it'll go ahead and take the play out, but it can't back up. So the question is what do the rear, how is the rear brakes adjusted? One way could be the parking brake. So you put your front wheels up against do you have a parking brake that immediately lets go when you're in drive?
No, it's hand operated. It's a pull up in the console, okay. Center console.
All righty. Then just hop in it. Don't put your foot on the brake. Turn on the air conditioning and no foot on the brake, and I want you to pull it up and down about 20 times. Try to extend it up all the way and then put it back down. Then I want you to apply your brake pedal, and I want you to do the same thing. And then I want you to immediately go drive it. And if you feel the difference, then it's probably the second as opposed to the first. By applying the brakes, you're taking all the slack out of the back brakes, and then when you turn around and pull your lever, you're now ratcheting that rear piston in. If I was going to do your rear brakes, I would simply jack it up in the air, and I would just take, and there's a lever there, and I would just use the lever to push them out. Now, there you could have shoe brakes on the back, what we call a hat assembly. If your emergency brake has a pair of shoes on it, then none of this I'm telling you is going to work. But the default is just take it to your garage and have them do it for you. I can't imagine they would charge you more than $50, $75 to appropriately adjust the rear disc brakes at the back of your car.
Question. Not too long ago, I had to have the rear, they have to be disc, the rear pads replaced and that whole thing with the rear brakes. And shouldn't they do that at the time of installing those brakes?
That's a great question. But I'm up against a brake, so you stay right there, and I'm going to answer your question on the other side of the brake. We'll be right back. Nothing to lose.
But there's nothing I can try in the meanwhile.
No, you can still. You're going to put your car in park or reverse or neutral, whatever you want to, and you're going to pump the parking brake 20 times with your foot off the brake. That has to be in park. And then your foot on the brake 20 times, and then just do a drive it. You'll know immediately if the pedal comes up a lot because it'll be completely different. And the first stop, you'll kind of throw yourself up against the steering wheel because you won't be ready for the new pedal height. But you can try that.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
I appreciate the advice, my friend.
You betcha. Thank you very much, Ted.
Take care.
Uh-huh. Otto, you're up next. How can I help you, Otto?
I've got a leaky head gasket.
Okay.
And I was wondering if there's any stop leak that you can put in there to stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me the symptoms, though, first. What? How do you know you have a head gasket?
There's no water in the reservoir.
Okay.
And on the left-hand side, as you're sitting in a car, there seems to be water down under.
Okay, you still there?
I lose you every once in a while on the phone.
Okay.
As you're looking down and barely see it, it's an S10 Chevy. You barely see it on the front end, on the left-hand side as you're sitting in the car.
Okay, now how many miles are on the S10?
98.
And it's a 4.3 or a 2.8?
Yeah, 4.3.
I don't think you have a head gasket. I think you have an intake gasket leaking coolant. And the answer is if it's a head gasket, yes, we have some really good sealer. But I'd be willing to bet you $10 that that's an intake gasket. And I'll tell you why. Because that's the most common. And any kind of external leak will use the coolant out of the overflow first, and then it'll start consuming coolant out of the radiator. Obviously, any kind of leak, when the system is pressurized and gets warm, then it's going to force coolant out of that. For you to see that leak really tells me that it's the intake gasket. Now, someone has to, first of all, to diagnose this is a piece of cake. Most shops would do it for you for free. But we're going to fill it up with water, and we're going to pressure test it. And if you're looking at the front of the motor, and you've got that intake manifold that sits right on top of it, and it attaches to both sides of the head, if you look, if there's any green coming out of that corner, the driver's side corner.
Well, this thing's taking red.
Okay, well, red then. If there's any red or green, a stain from the corner of that intake downward, then the intake needs to be pulled off. So the technician verifies that it's coming from the gasket there. He pulls the intake off. Now, here's where it gets kind of rough. The intake should have nice square holes on this aluminum intake that's been sitting on a steel head. Aluminum and steel don't like one another. And the aluminum wins or loses because the steel's tougher. So that hole, instead of being a nice shaped window, is now pretty corroded. So what you're hoping is that the technician will take a little JB Weld, or he'll take a flat sander and he'll clean that hole up for you so you don't have to buy a $400 intake manifold. At worst case, you can still save half of the cost of a new manifold if you send it to a machine shop and have them just weld it up and then grind it back out. They'll charge you about $200, but you get your old manifold back. Now, if I were going to do it, I'd use Felpro gaskets because there's a lot of gaskets out there, but my favorite is Felpro because of the electrolysis between the aluminum intake manifold and the steel heads. The Felpro seems to handle that a lot better than in the rest of them. And the bad news is you're probably going to spend in the vicinity, you're not going to get out any cheaper than probably $500 or $600, and it could cost you all the way up to about $850, depending on the intake. And if you have to buy an intake, you're going to be up to $1,000.
That's what I kind of figured.
But here's the deal. You'll never do it again. And included in that is an oil change, flushing the cooling system, and putting on the new intake gasket. So you're getting a lot of services for just one repair. But I got to tell you, now, what part of town you live in, Otto?
Almost in the Pets Junction.
Okay. I've got a shop out there.
Jerry's?
Jerry's?
They can do it?
Absolutely. And if you go to Jerry's at Main Street east of Sossaman?
I used him one time.
Okay. You go over there and just tell him Mark Salem said bill him for the pressure test.
Okay.
Okay. You just tell him that. Just say, Mark Salem said to bill him for the pressure test. So would you pressure test it and tell me what this leak is, what that leak is?
Okay.
All righty?
All right.
All right.
And I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
I had an 83 Buick, and that had the oil filter on the front.
Okay.
Would that fit on a S10 Chevy?
No. Are you trying to get the oil filter to a place that you can deal with it easier?
Well, it's right underneath. I just thought I had a couple of spares, and I thought I could use them. They seem to be the same size.
Okay, that's easy. What you're saying is you've got some oil filters, and here's what you got to do first. You sound like somebody that's been a farmer or a rancher. Your hands are probably pretty big. You take both filters and you stick your finger in the threaded hole on both of them.
Yeah.
If that's pretty close to the same, then you hold them and put them gasket to gasket. And if they're the same, then you take each filters, the one that comes for the 4.3 and then the ones that you got on the Buick, and take them to any parts store and say, does this cross to this or does this cross to this? Because it's entirely possible it does. Your old Buick took a Champ filter, was a 45 or a 51, and they were somewhat interchangeable. I'll bet you that could fit, but don't try it without making sure somebody looks it up in the book.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty, Otto. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
You bet. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question. Air conditioning season's right around the corner. I can save you lots of money for about $5. you're going to go into the auto parts store and get one of those little thermometers. They look like an ice pick with a thermometer near the handle. And get that. And it has a little shield on it. And it's got a pocket clip on it. So you set that in the center dash vent. And you just leave it there. And you monitor the air coming out of the center vent as you drive around. If the air is 55 degrees or less, 75-80% of the time, then you don't need to spend any money on your air conditioning, because it ain't going to get better than that. There's some small cars, both domestic and foreign, that'll pop 38 degrees air out of that vent. So all you have to do is look at the temperature. Now, obviously, it's going to get 55 or higher if you're sitting in traffic and it's a really hot, blistering day. But when you get moving, you should see it drop 10, 15 degrees. Because the air across the condenser is what really makes everything work well. So that's all you have to do, is just check the temperature. And we're learning that that's an important part of servicing your air conditioning. But we're also going to check the pressures, and we're going to clean the condenser, look at the evaporator, look for leaks, stuff like that. But really and truly, if your car is blowing less than 55 degrees, if it's anywhere between 38 and 55, then I'd save my money. I'd just use it somewhere else. All righty, 602-508-0960. We've still got time if you want to get in and get a call. But I wanted to also to remind you that there's a lot of good shops in the Valley, but Phoenix Body Works is one of the best. Phoenix Body Works has been around for a long time, since 1982, and they offer free estimates, written lifetime warranty, and they are the insurance claims professionals. Phoenix Body Works takes the hassle out of dealing with your insurance company. They're going to step in your place, and they're going to protect you. They're going to be your advocate. They're going to help you make good decisions, because not all the decisions made by the insurance company has your best interest at heart. Sometimes they want them to fix a part that really needs to be replaced.
Ed is next. Ed.
So Phoenix Body Works is a great place, and they serve the north area, North Phoenix, Anthem, New River. They're located on a half a block north of Deer Valley Road on 19th Avenue. 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road. So keep them in mind if you need paint and body work, or if you get involved in an accident. You certainly don't want the owner of the repair shop to be beholden to one insurance company, because if 95% of his business is from one insurance company, when you go in there, you're going to get fed to the wolves. You want someone who's professional and who will raise their hand and say, hold on a minute, this customer's better served with a new part as opposed to fixing that old one. Ed, good morning to you. How can we help you?
I don't know if this is serious or not. I had a check engine light come on yesterday on my Toyota Corolla.
Uh-huh.
But it's off now, but when they did the reading, I took it to an AutoZone. They said it was the torque converter clutch solenoid performance is the probable cause, and then there were three other things listed. One was low transmission fluid oil, but that I checked that was not low. And then I talked to a few different mechanics, and they're all telling me different things.
Well, I would think, first of all, you have to know that the torque converter clutch activity occurs between 48 and up miles an hour, 45 to 50, it'll shift into lockup. So if you're driving around town, chances are the light won't come back on. You'll have to kind of get above that 45 to 50 mile an hour range, and you'll have to.
I've driven about the last hour now on the freeway. I was hoping that would go back on.
And it hasn't.
No.
Okay, well then, what's there to fix? They want to fix all those old codes. Those codes could have been there from Fred Flintstone time.
What I was worried about, because the one person said, don't worry about it. The other one said, well, if you don't get those minor things fixed, it could get, later on your transmission may go out.
The problem is if the fluid's not burnt and the light came on and went back off, then what are we fixing? But depending on the miles and all that kind of stuff, yes, you probably should have somebody sniff the fluid. You should have somebody drive it. But because the light's off, the defect isn't there anymore. So it could have just been the solenoid stuck, and now it's free. A little piece of dirt got in the solenoid, or whatever. But there has to be additional symptoms. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Chandler. Well, the thing is, just a few months ago, I had a transmission flush, so I'm pretty sure it's not the transmission oil. But I did drive on a really dusty road last couple days, so I don't know
Okay. It could be just about anything, but I still stand by my old, the same thing. Don't do anything until you have a problem that you can fix. We'll be back in an hour, in about 2 seconds, but we'll be back for another hour.
This week, callers, they're going to hold on to the next hour.
And
it'll
until
be
you
Bob
balance your hormones,
Jim.
Losing weight can be practically impossible. Thank goodness today we have Ambrin.
For informational purposes only.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and thank you to the caller that reminded me that I never finished my story from last hour, and I apologize for that, but thank you for thinking about that. I'm going to tell the story just real quick, okay? Do the best you can. A gentleman, his name is Ahmed, okay? That's all you need to know. He comes in and he says, will you check the oil in my car? It's out in front. My son goes out and says, yeah, it's quart low. He says, will you add a quart? Now, during that process of checking the oil, Ahmed held the hood up. Well, when they pulled the car behind the gates into the shop, my son recognized that the two hydraulic hood shocks are not working. So he put a pair of vice grips on the hood shock on the driver's side of the fender. He lifted the hood up, put the vice grips on there, that holds the hood up. Well, Ahmed's standing right there. So as my son is underneath the hood, all of a sudden the vice grips disappear, the hood comes down and hits him across the back. There's a big old mark across his shirt. And there's all kinds of people in the shop that saw it. Well, he gets the hood off of him, and he sets the hood down, and he looks around, and Ahmed's standing there like he's been struck by lightning. Now, he came in with a white hat on, and he still had the white hat on. But yet, he later claims that his head was crushed by the hood. So we help him to the ground. We don't know what's going on. The police are called, the fire calls, the ambulance is called. All he says is call 911, call 911. That's all he keeps saying. And I don't really recognize him as a Middle Easterner guy, so I start speaking Spanish to him, and I say, you know, how's your head? And he looks at me, and he goes, I'm from Lebanon. But he tells the policeman he can't feel his feet, he can't feel his hands, his head's crushed, he can't think, he doesn't know what his name is. He tells the ambulance company. So you know what the end of the story is. A couple of days later, and then we lock up his car and leave it. Some lady shows up, we get her ID, she takes the car and goes. We get a call from an attorney that says, hey, Mark, I'm sorry, I got to call you, but you know, one of my clients was at your shop the other day, and he was, sir, just give me the name of your insurance company, and we'll just deal with them. And this is what I said to him. I'm going to step aside from insurance because I know my insurance company will give you $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 just to go away. But I'm not going to let that happen. So I'm stepping aside from coverage. You have to sue me. I'm the owner of the land, the building, and the business. And we're going to trial, I guarantee you. And you have no idea of the witnesses or the videotape or anything that I might have. So after a couple of exchanges, he decides he's going to pass. Well, Ahmed goes to the second attorney. Now the second attorney, same thing. And we say the same thing to him. We're not going to talk to you. Don't come around. Don't serve us with any papers. Go ahead and file your suit. File your suit. We're going to go to trial. There's not going to be any settlement negotiations. You're not going to get a dime. Well, we'll work with your insurance company. No, we're not even going to tell you we have insurance because we're going to step aside from the policy. We're going to make you work for every dime. So the second attorney just bailed this morning. And so I'm sure he's out looking at billboards right now for all those, the beaver, the hawk, the eagle, the snake, and they're trying to find somebody to file this suit against us because he's got a big bill with the ambulance company and with the emergency people he's got to pay for. Unfortunately, he was never hurt. This was a big setup from the beginning. Never happened to me before in my life, but I got to tell you, that's exciting. So anyway, Bob, you're first. Let's get back to cars. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Last week, you told a story about an older Chevy truck, and you had to have the intake manifold repaired, and then the engine wouldn't hold oil pressure, and you were going to do an autopsy?
Yep.
What did you find with the autopsy?
Nothing. We have no idea. None whatsoever. We took the old motor out. Well, the 50,000-mile motor. And we pulled all the main and rod bearings off of it, thinking we're going to find copper again, and we didn't. And we mic'd them with plastic, gauged them, and nothing. Then we went up and we left the valve train in it, and we fired up. We dropped a rod down into the oil pump drive, and we put a heavy-duty air gun on that, and we were building 40, 50 pounds of pressure. We were looking for a leak because we got the intake off. We can't find anything. Then we take all the push rods and all the lifters out, and we can't find anything wrong with them. Then we pull the camshaft out, and we can't find anything wrong with that. So we put the camshaft back in, because we're going to oil from the bearings on the camshaft, and we pull it out and push it in as we're firing up for oil pressure, and we have the appropriate oil. So I have no idea in the world. I'm buying this guy a new long block, actually a short block. We're going to use his heads. His heads were fine, and they don't have any oil issues anyway. And that truck should deliver Monday or Tuesday. And I wish I knew, but I got to tell you something. It happened on our watch, something we did. So I've asked the engine remanufacturer to pay particular attention to this, and when they get it, if they would be so kind as to get it ready to rebuild and find out where my oil pressure went. But it happened on my watch. He came in, he didn't have a little oil pressure problem. I gave it to him. So whatever we did on that intake, whatever we did wrong, well, we're going to have to pay for it. He was really nice about it, but I don't have an answer for you. I'm going to hope that Jasper is the rebuilder, and they've promised me they'll take the short block and check it out and tell me where my oil leak was at. The only thing I didn't pull is the timing cover off of it, but that's just a splash oil-fed area, and I can't imagine that I'm losing a lot of oil pressure in the timing cover. That's the only thing I didn't cover. All right? I'm sorry.
So did that look like a 50,000-mile engine when you got into it?
It did. It did. It did. Oh. The intake ports were really clean. The exhaust ports were really clean. It had no slime in the bottom of the oil pan. It really, really did look like 55,000 miles. And if you looked at my customer, you'd say to yourself, he's not one of them that I would say to my wife, I wonder if he's telling me the truth, because you just look at him and you know he is. So,
all right. Thanks, Mark.
All right. You betcha, Bill. Or Bob, thank you very much. Jim, you're up next. How are you?
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I've been wanting to ask you this question. This is a 2003 Mitsubishi.
Okay.
And every once in a while, a plume of smoke comes out the back. It'll last for anywhere from 20 to 30 seconds.
Okay.
And it's just pluming, and then it goes away.
Okay. What color's the smoke?
It's white.
Okay. And are you adding any fluids at all?
Am I adding... no, not that I can, just to keep the oil up, that's about it.
Okay, is it using oil?
It was.
Okay, but it's not anymore?
Well, that's what I'm checking. I just had it serviced, and they said you just keep an eye on it right now. So okay. I'm assuming it's going to still use the oil.
All right. Well, any time that we have white smoke, typically is transmission fluid or coolant.
Oh,
now,
okay.
It also could be oil, but it's not gas because gas is black. So there's a lot of things it could be. So I want you to keep an eye on the overflow jug. Make sure that the level, it's okay for the level to vary an inch or two. I don't care. I don't ever want to see it empty, and I don't ever want to see it full. I want to see the level stay right between the add and the full mark or thereabouts.
Okay.
If you want to mark the level, you do it tomorrow morning, because on a cold is where you mark it. And when it's hot, it goes up, and when it's cold, it goes down.
Okay.
Now, another thing you do, is that a four-cylinder or a six?
Four-cylinder.
Okay.
I think it's a 2.4.
If I were you, do you know how? Can you take the plugs out of it?
Yes.
One by one, take them out, look at them, set it back on, just put two threads in the hole, put the cable back on it, do all of them. If you have a problem with the cylinder, you will be able to compare the four spark plugs to each one another, and you'll be able to clearly see which one is colored differently. If it's water, you're going to have one spark plug much cleaner than the rest. Mm. If it's oil, one spark plug will be dirtier than the rest. Now, transmission fluid used to be in the old days when we had vacuum modulators that helped shift the transmission, and the vacuum modulator diaphragm would go bad, and we'd start sucking transmission fluid into the engine. I'm pretty doggone sure your Mitsubishi doesn't have that system. So I can't imagine how transmission fluid might be getting into the engine. But I'm thinking that if you just look at the spark plugs, I think if that'll tell you something, and keep an eye on the coolant level and keep an eye on the oil level, and don't add any oil till it gets below the add mark.
Okay.
And then see what happens there.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, you betcha, Jim. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
I'll tell you what, a day in the life of Mark Salem sometimes just goes crazy.
Tom is next.
My wife says, can we ever spend some time in the slow lane of life? But I got to tell you something, though. I'm grateful that this guy came in and is trying to bamboozle us. I'll tell you why. It's never happened to us before. My kids are getting ready to assume some responsibility. My older children, grown boy and girl, Alan and Andy, they're getting ready to assume some responsibility for our operation. And so they have an opportunity to see this when they're in their early 30s, where Dad hasn't seen it until his 50s. So it's good. It's good they were there. It's good they get all wound up. It's good their underwear gets all tied in a knot. It's good for us to learn together so that they can see. Now, here's one of the things that we did right. As soon as he fell, or as soon as we laid him on the ground, we went into what we call crisis mode. And everybody starts writing down what they're seeing and what they're feeling and what they've heard. And there's two people get shop cameras and start snapping photographs of the car, of the hood, of my son's, the mark on the back of his shirt, of the guy laying on the ground, blah, 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 of the car, the license plates, the VIN number, inside the car, outside the car. So that's called crisis mode for us. And we documented everything perfectly, even him laying on the ground with his white hat on that matches perfectly the picture we took of him when he walked in the front door. So if his head was crushed by the hood that actually fell 8 inches onto the shoulders of my son, how did his head get crushed and his hat still on? But anyway, I'm glad it happened. I hope the next guy doesn't think, you know what I'm going to do next time? If he's on the ground and I know for sure he's just tickling me, I'm going to get my taser out. I'm going to hit him in the hip with it and see if he can dance then. Just kidding. Tom.
1 minute to go, Mark.
Tom, give me your question real quick.
Okay, my question is this. 2 weeks ago, I talked to you about my car, my 1996-98 Elite. As I'm accelerating, you know, I'm driving. All of a sudden, putt, 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 boom, 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 no gas. And mechanics can't figure out what's going on with it. They're telling me it's not a fuel pump problem. You answered my question kind of quickly, and then that was the end of the show. So I didn't get to write all that information. You told me to have, I can get a gauge to put on there. I mentioned a gauge to my mechanic, and he said, well, you know, a gauge, pressure gauge, where do we need to put it? We got 3, 4, whatever different things to look for, what gauge and what's it called. You also mentioned my car has, it could be a timing chain problem. Well, this particular car does not have a timing chain. So I'm kind of,
okay.
Still kind of out of mess, what to do, what's the name of this pressure gauge, where do they put it?
Okay, I'm with you. I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to give you all the time you need, okay? I'm going to give you all the time you need. Anybody else wants to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Ed, pay attention. Ed had the check engine light, the transmission overdrive codes. Ed, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. And there's hardly a week that goes by that I don't get a call from a happy customer from Quality Transmission. They tell me how knowledgeable Bob and his staff are, how much money they were saved, and how happy they are that I recommended Quality Transmission, which is the only East Valley transmission shop I recommend. And frankly, there's a lot of bad ones in this town. I know of two of them specifically, but Quality is one I'm going to hang my hat on. He's located at McClintock, north of University in Tempe, just north of Minder Binders, there on the northeast corner of University and McClintock. Okay, we're going to go back to Tom. Tom, on your Elite. I'm really confused because the answer that he gave you, if that would have been one of my people, I would have been terribly upset. There is a port in your fuel injection system that we can attach to. And if there is no port, then there's going to be a banjo fitting that we have adapters for. So if it's port fuel or if it's throttle body, no matter what kind of fuel injection it is, we can hook a fuel pressure gauge up to that. We can tape it to the front windshield, and you can go drive it. Because there's no way anybody, Mark Salem and any of his people or anybody else in this city, can tell you it's not fuel-related until you take a test.
Okay, yeah. I think they had done, you know, maybe a fuel filter pressure test. I'm not sure, you know, if they did that and drove it to see what if they were losing or gaining pressure. They didn't tell me that. I just know, you know, they kept the car a couple times for me. Check the fuel pressure itself or the fuel filter.
I know, but see, here's the problem. You can, if the car's running fine, why are you checking all of it when it's running fine?
Yeah, that's the thing. It runs fine until it does that thing.
Right. And here's something that's important, okay? Your car is too doggone old to have any kind of fuel pressure response to the PC. So
okay.
We're not going to monitor fuel pressure. So in the absence of any other codes, the default is go to the fuel system. Now, we can check that thing on Saturday morning, Sunday morning. We can check it every morning, every afternoon of the day for the next 2 years. But we have to catch it in its bad mood. I want to know what the fuel pressure is when it's acting up.
Right, and I know, like I said, I've left the car with them for up to a week, and it just didn't do it for us all week long. Then I get the car home 2 days later, it doesn't send it again.
Okay, well, you got two choices. You can either get on the internet and find a fuel pressure gauge that you can buy, and I bet you can probably spend $50, $60 and get one that'll fit your car.
Okay.
Or you can go rent one, and we need to do that first, because throttle by wire, anything to do with throttle, anything to do with ignition, has codes that are related to it.
Right.
And so when we're driving down the road and all of a sudden the computer loses number one on the crank sensor or loses the cam sensor phasing, then all of a sudden it goes, hey, what happened? Well, it shuts down fuel and spark. Then all of a sudden, boom, boom, they come back and it goes, oh, but I better set a code. I lost my RPM signal from the engine, therefore I shut off the fuel and the spark. That's what it means.
Okay. You know, and I've had problems with this car where, you know, they've had to reset the code to the ignition. I've had to have the ignition put in. You know, the engine light comes on, fail the emissions, then they reset the code, then they go and pass emissions. So I've had these other little types of problems before with other things. So,
well, what part of town do you live in?
I'm in North Scottsdale, via Daventura and 101.
Okay. Air Park Auto?
Air Park Auto, okay.
Yeah, Air Park Auto, Hayden and Raintree. It's owned and operated by a lady named Nadine. Her husband, well, both her and her husband were good friends of mine and my wife. Her husband since passed, but it's a shop that's run by a lady, and trust me when I tell you, there ain't no BS flying around there. Those boys aren't going to think they can outsmart her or out-talk her if they make a mistake. So
yeah.
It's one of the shops. I've got three shops that are run by just women. They answer to no man. And in each case, that's a clean shop.
Okay. All right? Yeah, the guys are good, too, because they didn't understand what I was trying to tell them. I was trying to write so fast the last time I spoke to you. They, you know, maybe just not familiar enough with that. You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm just, I'm sure glad you didn't say it was my shop.
No.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much. All righty. Ward, you're up next. Buddy, how can I help you?
To check with you on what you'd recommend as the total weight of rock to haul at one time in a 1992 Chevy Silverado 1500 pickup truck. I don't want to overload that sucker, but what would you recommend in tonnage or weight?
Okay. Here's what I do.
Uh-huh.
With it in the relaxed mode, I'd measure a place on the bumper with the tape measure sitting on the ground. Let's say that the top of the bumper is 20 inches, okay?
Okay.
Then you're going to pull in, and there's going to be a front loader that's going to stuff it in your truck, right?
Right, right.
Okay, I want you to drop it no more than 6 inches.
6 inches, okay.
Yeah. And so you're going to kind of stand there and hold your tape, and you're just going to keep waving him, come in, give me more,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead. And he's going to shake the bucket, and he's going to try to center up your load. But
okay.
When you get down 6 inches, I want you to stop. And
okay.
Because I know you've collapsed the springs at that point, and I know
right.
You aren't going to go far.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever that weighs, because they weighed you coming in.
Right.
And they're going to weigh you going out. Now, here's something else that you can do. When you go in, you ask the lady, give me a weight on the rear axle. Okay, let's say that the lady says that the rear axle, your weight on your rear axle is 2,000 pounds.
Okay.
You just have the rear tires on the scale, that's all.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now you already looked at the tires, and the tires each have a maximum inflation and a maximum load.
Mm-hmm.
The maximum load is 4,000 pounds each. That means you have 8,000 pounds of tires underneath a rear end that weighs 2,000 pounds.
Okay.
You got 6,000 pounds of tires available to you, but you don't have that much spring available to you. And 6,000 pounds is 3 tons, and it'll bury that truck.
Yeah.
So the idea is that you can say, okay, well, I weigh 2, and I've got 8,000 pounds. I can certainly take a ton on the weight side because 2,000 pounds I already weigh, but 2,000 pounds more only puts me at 4. And my tires can handle 8, so I'll tell him, give me, and you say to him, he's going to want to do it by yard or tonnage.
Right.
A square yard is about a ton.
Okay.
And what granite are you getting? Quarter minus, or you're going to get big stuff?
I'm going to get about half inch.
Okay. Are you going to use it for a driveway?
Yeah, in a yard, actually.
Okay. Because the only thing, I'm butting into where I don't belong, but that the quarter minus is better for a driveway just because it packs down so nicely.
Okay.
But the half inch, it doesn't have the powder, and so the driveway is always unstable. So when you pull in, there's noise as you're crunching all that stuff.
Okay.
But for the yard, I like the half inch because when I get in there with my blower, I'm not blowing granite everywhere.
Well, that's true. That's certainly true.
So anyway, thanks for letting me butt in.
let me ask you this. So you figure that probably safe would be about a half ton, about 1,000 pounds?
No, I think you can handle 2 tons.
2,000
pounds, which is a ton.
Right.
I think you can handle 2,000 pounds. Now, I'll give you something else that's a good
idea. 1 minute to go, Mark.
You pull in and she gives you the total weight. You ask her what it is. Okay? Let's say she says your truck is 3,000 pounds.
Okay.
On the door sticker of your 92 Chevy, it says gross vehicle weight, GVW.
Okay.
You
right.
look at that. That tells you what your payload is. So if she says you weigh 3 and the gross payload is 6, that means you can take a ton and a half.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
She's going to give you the weight on the front side. You already know what the gross vehicle weight is on the sticker.
Mm-hmm.
One, or the sticker minus the other one, is what we call payload.
Okay.
So sticker minus your gross minus what you weigh already is your payload. So you now, if it's 3,000 pounds, you know it's a ton and a half you can take.
Okay. I just didn't want to overload that sucker.
Now, how far are you going to go?
Well, it's All Star Materials, which is just down the road from you there.
Okay, don't really and truly, as long as you drive slow and turn your flashers on and stuff like that, you're going to be okay. I mean, ask All Star. They've had trucks going out there with the bumper sitting 3 inches off the ground.
Oh, my goodness.
All righty.
Okay.
All right, good luck, Ward.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All righty, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to you.
This is Bob.
Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And I think I got everybody covered, so we're going to go to John. John, you're up next. Thank you for holding as long as you have.
Hey, thank you very much. I got a couple questions for you, and maybe more than you want to answer, and that's fine. You can just
okay.
shut me down when you're ready. But I got an S10 Chevy with a 2.2, and it smells like gas, but you never see any gas. And it's got 300,000 miles on it. So am I just kind of maybe leaking around where the gas just gets... circulated back to the tank and maybe the injectors or something?
Well, yeah, those two places are areas of concern. The first place is, have you gone through an emissions test lately?
Yeah.
And you passed?
I shouldn't say lately. I guess that was a Dodge. Probably about, 2 years ago.
Okay. Are you stuffing the tank by chance?
Am I what?
Stuffing the tank when you fill it up?
Oh, no. When it clicks, I just shut her down.
All right. I want you to run off the bottom quarter of the tank for as long as you can, 2, 3, 4 days a week maybe, and see if the smell goes away. Because sometimes after 300,000 miles, we develop a leak on the top of the tank.
Oh, I put a new pump in that thing about 6 months ago.
Okay.
I took that off, and so if you're talking about leaking where you put the new pump in, I'm good there.
Okay, but there's also a vent line that goes up to the canister.
Yes,
and
there is.
And that line sometimes will leak. Now, you got two choices. You can run off the bottom quarter and see if the gas smell goes away, or you can overfill it and pump and stuff it full of fuel, drive it around and shake the steering wheel left and right, and then stop. And you know what the tank looks like, so you get underneath there and look all around it. And if it's full and it's leaking on the top of the tank, then you'll have wet gas running down the side of the tank.
Gotcha. It kind of sounds like it's under the hood, though. It smells like it's under the hood, but
okay.
I could be wrong.
Well, it could be the PCV valve, too. If the PCV valve is not vacuuming the pressure inside of the engine, then you're going to get the gas smell. Another thing you're going to do is if for some reason your air conditioning system, your climate control system is on outside air, then the fumes from a 300,000-mile engine will be sucked into the cab via the grill right in front of the windshield. If you go to recirculatory, it'll kill those fumes. But your injectors are the other possibility, and you got that four-cylinder motor, so you have a lot of throttle body with two injectors or one injector.
I thought I had the injector for every cylinder, but maybe
and
I don't.
And you might. You might very well.
It's a 97, so I'm not sure.
It's one of those things that you can follow the fuel rail. Where the injectors are at, and get a flashlight and look down in there if you see any kind of gas residue. And sometimes, you know, we'll take a piece of hose and put it up to our nose, and we'll stick it down in that hole and just draw some fumes up. And,
wow, good thinking. Never thought about
that.
Yeah,
just get a straw from McDonald's or something and do that. Yeah. You know, I'd probably put a piece of tissue over the end of it so you didn't get a big piece of grease in your nose. But those are the places it's going to leak. It's going to leak. The canister's wet, the top of the tank is wet, or one of the injectors is wet, or the PCV valve isn't vacuuming the motor.
I might try that. PCV is the easiest thing to find. And I'll check those other things, too.
Okay. All right. That it?
No, I got some more, if you don't mind.
Oh, go ahead.
Starter's grinding every now and then when you start it up. It's got 300,000 miles on this thing, and I've never changed a starter, so I'm thinking it's time to change that starter.
Otherwise, you hit it, and it spins the starter but doesn't spin the motor. You let go, and then you hit it again. It firmly engages and spills the motor, right?
Spins. It firmly engages, but when it cranks the motor, it cranks slow, and you can hear it going, you know, it sounds like it's actually grinding in the starter, right. And it's got a new battery.
Okay, but I need to make sure the battery is not being dropped below 9.5 volts during that period of time.
Okay.
So hook up your digital voltometer to the battery terminals. Have somebody help you. Start the thing tomorrow morning. Start it 2 or 3, 4 times and make sure the battery voltage never drops below 9.6. As a matter of fact, you should stay up above 11. If that's the case...
When I'm cranking, you mean?
Yes, when you're cranking. Okay. If that's the case, the battery's not the problem guaranteed. But if the battery's dropping to 9.6, it doesn't mean the battery's bad. It means it could be drawing excessive amps. So at that point, you've got a problem, but you don't know if it's the starter or the battery. But because you have a new battery and you have a 300,000-mile starter, I'd bet the starter.
Okay.
All right, I got to go, but thank you very much, John. Doc and Chuck,
time.
You bet. And Reed, you're next. So when we come back, we're going to get you right away. Doc, Chuck, and Reed, and anybody else at 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Those of you that are shy and that don't want to talk on the radio, you can always email me. I answer your emails as quickly as I can. Typically, I don't do all of them on Monday morning because I got other things on my plate Monday morning because there's always a train wreck from the weekend. However, I am pretty prompt. My email address is pretty easy. It's mark@marksalem.com. My website is marksalem.com, but Mark with a K at marksalem, S-A-L-E-M. Salem like the witches, Salem like the cigarettes, Salem like Oregon. So Mark at marksalem.com. And I'll help you anytime you want. So you can ask me anything. If you just give me the year, make, and model and the mileage, that'll get us off to a good start. When we come back again, Doc, Chuck, and Reed. You're my 1, 2, 3 calls. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem. It's 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. And like I promised, Doc, you're up first, buddy. How can I help you today?
Well, got a question on that Jasper motor.
Uh-huh.
That was you guys pulled apart. You pulled the rocker arms, you pulled the push rods, you pulled the lifters, and you said you pulled the camshaft.
Yeah.
And inspected that.
Yeah.
Well, you also said that there was oil sloshing at the front of the motor for the timing chain. Okay.
Right.
But Mark, how did you get the camshaft out of the block without pulling the timing cover and undoing the bolt and the timing chain? I'm puzzled. How did that?
We pulled it out the back of the motor.
Oh, the back of the motor. Oh, through the freeze plug.
Yeah, but that.
But isn't there a bolt holding that upper sprocket to the camshaft? I mean, it just doesn't freewheel in there.
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but I know the timing cover wasn't taken off because the short. First of all, it isn't a Jasper motor; it's a motor that it's a 55,000-mile motor on a Ford truck that the customer asked us to do some work, and somehow or another we fouled up his motor. The replacement motor's a Jasper, but the replacement comes with the timing cover, so we're just going to hang the sheet metal, which is the oil pan and the valve covers.
The
camshaft came out of the back, and they may have pulled the timing cover to get the that top sprocket off.
I was baffled how you got the camshaft unhooked from the timing chain and the top sprocket without undoing the timing cover.
See, you're too technical for me, because here's my thinking. I passed the timing cover by saying there's nothing but a splash oil system in there, so I knew
that's
I wasn't
true.
Losing.
That's true. That's true.
And see, and you caught me, and you're right, and I you're right, but I was just trying to make it easy to understand.
It's okay, Mark. It's okay. It's okay. Now there is another long-term issue. Was by chance, if you'd gone to synthetic oil on some of these motors, I've had the personal experience of them losing oil pressure in a bizarre, weird way. That just like you, we pull the motor out, we totally get it down to the bare block, and we can't find a thing wrong. We put it all back together, switch to conventional oil, voila, there's no noise.
Yeah. Well, early on.
Go figure.
No, I had the oil pump in and out of this twice. I had the oil pan off three times, actually four times. So, and I did do what you suggested. I didn't start with synthetic. I started with a 1030, and then I went to a 30 weight, and then I even went to a 40 weight, and I couldn't get the oil pressure not to drop below 8 pounds at idle, and unless I cheated it and then raised the idle, and I didn't feel like that was in the best interest.
Right,
so.
Right.
All right, now listen, if you look for a job, give me a call, okay? But you can't keep embarrassing me like this.
Wait a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
I sat in front of you before.
You have?
Oh, yeah. I presented all kinds of paperwork, but you didn't hire me. It's okay. I understand.
You know what? I don't remember anybody by the name of Doc, but are you master certified?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, LP1, too.
Well, where are you working at now?
I can't reveal that.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
But, you know, it's okay.
All right.
I was a little bit older than you.
So what?
Oh, okay.
I'm a little older than my wife.
All right, Doc. I'm just having some fun with you.
I appreciate that. You're right.
I do not mean any condescending anything here. It's just the old 464 had the valve seals that would suck up through that little flipper flap and the pickup screen and go in and jam up the pump.
Yeah, but this is a 5.8.
That would twist up the rod between the cam sprocket and down, you know,
yeah,
the right angle drive. But I'm going, how did he do that?
No, it was a 5.8.
Okay.
It was a 5.8. Right. It wasn't the 460. I would have been crying if I had to replace a 460 on my dime. What's the matter with you? So, all right, I got to go, Doc, but thank you very much.
You have a great weekend.
All right, same to you very much. Thank you. Reed, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
I have a 04 Tahoe with 164,000 miles on it, and I've had two episodes recently that I can't figure out. One of them is it acts like it's run out of fuel. And the other is that it's in drive, and my wife goes to push on the gas, and the engine just revs and doesn't do anything.
Okay.
She had no check engine light come on. She can say that the check engine light is working.
Okay. It sounds like that you might have a transmission problem, because she's in drive, and she gives it gas, and it doesn't move. And then other times you say that it feels like it doesn't have gas. You're giving it gas, but it's not moving you, right?
Yes, and you pull off to the side of the road, and the engine dies, and it won't restart.
Okay. I think you got two separate problems, because the fuel pressure and volume needed to idle the car is very small. So if you only have enough to idle the car, then your car won't do 30 or 31 or 32 or 33, because you'll run out of fuel pressure and volume at that point. In your particular case, you've got what sounds like a fuel supply problem, and if I were you, next time that happens, I'd just stuff it to the floor. And if you stuff it to the floor and all of a sudden it lights up, then you can say that's not a fuel-related problem. That could be an ignition problem, could be a control module. on the transmission one where your wife puts it into drive and it doesn't go into drive, the first thing I do is just check the fluid based on what the dipstick says, and if you're not sure how to do it, add a quart to it. Just put a quart of dextrin and it isn't going to hurt it. If she says all of a sudden you've made a difference, it's much better but not perfect, then we know low transmission fluid level was causing her pump to cavitate and pump air. Mm-hmm. But again, FAQ 00 on my website, marksalem.com, talks about the first thing the shop has to do is determine whether it's spark or fuel whenever we have a dying and stalling and hard restart condition. We have to determine if it's spark or fuel, and it's much easier to determine if the fuel pressure is good and the fuel volume is good than it is to check out the modules, the coils, the wires, the crankshaft sensor, the camshaft sensor, and all that other stuff. It's easier just to eliminate the fuel on the front side. The bad news is yours the same as everybody else that's called today. You don't have any fuel sensors, pressure sensors, so the computer's not going to know to turn on the check-in light when it dies because it doesn't know it's starved. However, when we go into your computer, we can look at what we call trim. And let's say zero is trim and it's got 100 to the left and 100 to the right. Well, on the left, from zero to the left 100 is lean condition. And from zero to the right number is a rich condition. And if I go in there, I want to see your numbers dancing around zero. Little left, little right, little rich, little lean. Little rich, little lean. But if I go in there and find out that your numbers are all 25, then I know you've been running lean for quite a while. And I'm really going to look hard at your fuel pressure. So fuel trim numbers give us a short-term number and a long-term number. And I'd be really interested in what yours are.
Okay.
All righty.
I'll check it out.
Good luck to you, Reed. Thank you very much. Joe, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
I'm going to put some of that brake fluid on top of my transmission, you know.
Uh-huh.
Half a pint.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to put 3 tablespoons into my power steering.
And then drink a couple.
Yeah, right.
I'm just teasing
you. Oh, I will. Anyway, do I have to take some out before I put some in?
No, not at all.
Oh,
not
good.
At all. Now, that, keep in mind, this is kind of an old-fashioned thing.
Yeah.
I've seen it work. Uh-huh. And it makes a difference. People say, oh, it didn't work. Well, that's probably because the seal is too hard or the seal's torn or cut or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Now, another thing, too, is if the bushing that's supposed to keep the shaft turning true is bad and allowing the shaft to wobble, then it'll wobble on the seal, and you're never going to fix that till you fix the bushing that's holding it.
Well, I don't have any leaks or anything, that thing.
Okay.
I got 58,000 miles on an 01 automobile van.
Yeah, you know what? Any good quality oil is going to, it's called elastomerics.
Yeah.
And any good oil is going to have that in it. But you can use the brake fluid. You're not going to hurt anything.
Oh, good. Now, one more question.
Okay.
You know, that track light comes on once in a while.
Uh-huh.
Does that have to be off?
Well, the track light's telling you that you have traction control, and it's telling you I lost sight of something.
Uh-huh.
And almost always, 75% of the time, it's one of the wheel sensors.
Oh.
So you're driving down the road, and the left front says 60 miles an hour, the right front says 60, the right rear says 60, and the left rear says 0.
Uh-huh.
Then it says, well, I'm looking, and his foot's not on the brake, but the rear wheel isn't spinning, and I know we aren't dragging it, so I'm going to turn on the traction light and say, hey, you need to check this.
I see.
And so when it comes on, you can shut it off if you want by disconnecting the battery, and it'll probably come on again. But pay attention to this. Does it come on when you're going straight, or does it come on after you make a really tight right turn or a tight left turn? That will help us focus on where it's at.
Oh, there's no special time. It just comes on once in a while.
Does it go off by itself?
I think it does.
Okay. In that case, I'd probably... You got two choices. You can bring it in and we're going to guess.
Uh-huh.
With your money, though.
Yeah.
Or you wait till it gets worse and easier to find. But that's not going to break you down.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm going to get new brakes on the front, so maybe that'll help.
Yeah. You never know, but I doubt it. Unless the sensor has been hurt up front, the wheel sensor's been hurt. Just say, if you're going to do front brakes, take a look at my front sensors and make sure they're nice and clean.
I see.
And they just take an air gun with a little bit of solvent, blow them off, clean them up, and you'll be fine.
Oh, that's okay. Okay, well, thanks again.
You bet you, Joe. Thank you very much.
Rachel is next.
Rachel, you're up next, babe. I didn't mean to say that.
That's okay. How are you?
I'm really good. I have a nephew that's married to Rachel, and so I got that. But anyway, Rachel, go ahead.
That's okay. No problem. Hey, I have a question for you. I have a 97 Chevy Suburban. The engine blew on it, and I went to a dealership, purchased an engine from one dealership, was told it was a turnkey motor, came with everything it needed, got a dealership or a dealership quoted price to install the engine from a totally separate dealer.
Okay.
Took it there, took the truck there. The quote from that dealership was $950 to install the engine.
Okay.
After the engine was installed, they call and tell me that it's $2,505. Told me once they got the engine, it didn't have any parts with it. They had to order everything. I did not get anything in writing. Do I have any leg to stand on, or did I just...
No.
Should I have got something in writing?
Well, that's water over the bridge, and yes, you should have. You should have done it with email or something. But all's not lost. It sounds to me like that they bid it wrong. They looked at the
okay.
wrong labor rate. And there's three or four different labor rates. Am I going to do a long block? Am I going to do a short block? Am I going to do a complete? Or am I going to do some portion of a short block? So
okay.
the $950, which is $950, it's 9.5 hours, was a crazy number from the beginning. If you'd have called me at the first time, I'd have told you, no way. That's
right.
A 20-hour engine. That's a $2,000 engine labor in and out guaranteed. Just
right,
go talk to
another
them.
Place told me.
Yeah, just go talk to them and say, you guys, this isn't fair. You told me 950 and it went to 2100. Now, today, that may very well be a fair price, but we need to work on this where both of us can walk away feeling good about one another. And that's
correct.
The conversation you need to have with either the general manager or the service manager. But say to them, you gave me a 950 estimate. That's what you gave me. That was the agreement we had. I don't want to call you on the 950, but I'm willing to pay a little extra, but I'm expecting some little cooperation from you. We'll meet in the middle somewhere.
Correct.
Okay?
Okay, well, thank you so much.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you, Rachel.
Okay.
All righty, Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you're lonesome, Mark at MarkSalem.com. And I'm good for car repair questions and stuff like that. I've had some really good car repair questions, and they've been good. I've had a lot of people that have, like Rachel, that have had a problem with a particular shop, and I usually am good for some advice that I would give in front of the shop. I would give you the same advice, and I don't, you know... The problem with me, everybody says, is nobody knows how you really feel, Mark, and they're making a sarcastic remark. I want to tell you about Action Auto. He's up on I-17 in Deer Valley.
1 minute
Action
left,
Auto.
Mark.
What's the matter?
1 minute left.
Okay. Yeah, Action Auto's been up on I-17 in Bell. They have master certified technicians. They get the job done right. They have an A-plus rating at the Better Business Bureau. So, I-17 in Deer Valley, the west side of I-17, the north side of the street, if you live in that area, Tom is a great guy. He's honest. He's dependable. He knows right from wrong. He's going to be around when your warranty is in session and all that stuff. He's not going to be gone. Heck, he's been in business since 1983, and he's a youngster, so you'll know that he's been around. For the rest of you, just want to remind you, tell him what symptoms you've got. Ask him if it's a fix or a guess. Ask for your final estimate. Write my check amount. I want my old parts back, and you pay with a credit card. Those are things that's going to protect you. I'm Mark Salem. Please drive safely. Please don't drink and drive. God bless you, and I'll see you next Saturday from 10 to noon right here on 960.